This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now in Britain, it's been a terrible week for the government and for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. It's also been a very bad week for the royal family, where Prince Andrew has lost all his duties and decorations and indeed what might be called nominal positions as a leader of the armed forces. This, is, of course, is as a result of a judge in the United States deeming that he would have to face his problem with sex with an underage woman. And there was no side door he could slip away from. He has become persona non grata now in what is a very important year for the Queen, marking her 70 years on the throne. We're joined now from London by Chris Johns, former chief economist of the Bank of Ireland, now a commentator. And Chris has his own podcast, of course, with our friend Jim Power. It's called The Other Hand, and it's doing really well. Chris, the Boris Johnson affair appears to have no ending. Just late last night, we learned that on the eve of Prince Philip's funeral last April, and indeed into the early hours of the morning, two parties were held in Downing Street. They merged into one boozy party at which there was dancing, a lot of alcohol consumed, it spilled over past the midnight hour. And a few hours later, there is this very poignant photograph of the Queen sitting alone, as she was obliged to do by lockdown restrictions, with her mask on in the chapel as the final ceremony was conducted for her late husband. This is a terrifying development, and there have been a number of them since Johnson's pretty feeble apology, quote unquote, to the House of Commons during leaders' questions on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, and one of the questions that's being asked of all the various apologists that have been wheeled out for Johnson since he made his apology is that people are asking, what did he exactly apologize for? Did he apologize for attending a party, or did he apologize for being caught? So, and the various people that are on things like the BBC's flagship radio program in the mornings and the BBC's Question Time only last night made a very ham-fisted job of trying to say just what it was he apologized for. And as you put it in inverted commas, quote unquote, the apology is being widely derided. His enemies have inevitably lapped all this up, but so have some of his friends. Andrew Bridgen, a Brexiteer ultra, a Spartan, as you would call him, has called for his resignation. We know that some letters have gone in, but we also know that the cabinet, with one or two exceptions, have rallied behind him. But I think the deeper message of all of this is that British democracy, the British rule of law is in trouble, because what Johnson stands accused of implicitly by attending this party is actually breaking the law. It's just not codes of behavior or custom and practice or even lying to Parliament. It's breaking a law for which people were actually fined last year in their thousands. People who sat on park benches eating sandwiches with each other. Students in their dormitories holding parties. The list is a long one of thousands of people the Metropolitan Police and other police forces pursued with great vigour. And of course, one of the most policed parts of the United Kingdom is Downing Street. So where were the police is a very fundamental question that needs to be asked.
Yes, and over 350 people were fined and found to have broken the restrictions the very week in May 2020 when Johnson was at that party in his own garden. They've made other mistakes as well, and one of them is a very bad mistake. On Wednesday night, they've boycotted Newsnight for a long time, but they sent Jacob Rees-Mogg out to bat for Johnson, and that turned into a catastrophe, really. And I'm not overstating it, really. I think, well, you can explain what Rees-Mogg did under questioning about Boris.
Yeah, the Newsnight is the BBC's flagship quasi-intellectual late-night news programme that goes out five nights a week. And it's part of the Conservative campaign against the BBC to have been boycotting that news programme for alleged bias against the Conservative government. So there's been this mantra, this little speech that the presenter of Newsnight, every time there's an issue that involves the government, there are most of the presenters on Newsnight are women these days, and she says, whoever it is, one of the main three presenters, we invited a member of the government to appear, but nobody was available. And that's been something they have said every night for years. So the fact that a front bencher turned up told you just how serious this was. The fact that they sent Rees-Mogg was extraordinary. These guys couldn't run a bath, let alone a PR campaign. They knew Rees-Mogg is terrible in public because of the way his manner, his words, and his incredible ability to put his foot in his mouth. During the election campaign, they sidelined him because they knew this. So this is not hindsight. They've always known that Rees-Mogg will get them into trouble. And so
he is, of course. Johnson appointed him as leader of the House of Commons, which is quite a powerful position within that institution.
Absolutely. And he is a significant figure within the Tory party, within the government. And one might ask why, but he is part of that old Etonian cabal that runs things in the UK. And the way in which he put his foot in it, well, one of the many ways he put his foot in it, the main way on Wednesday night, was the disparagement, the excoriating disparagement of the Scottish Conservative leader, whom he described as a lightweight. Which, of course,
Douglas Ross, who had called for Johnson's resignation, and it was significant because he is the leader of the Scottish Tories.
And this just pours fuel on the Scottish nationalist fire. There is, I imagine, it's somewhat wildly speculative, but there is this chatter around today that the Tories in Scotland could actually form a breakaway party now as a result of Rees-Mogg's comments. That's how serious they're taking it. They have taken, understandably, grave offence at what Rees-Mogg said. And of course, all of Scotland is in uproar. The Scottish Conservatives will have their annual conference later on this year, in a couple of months' time, and they're already saying there is no way that Johnson is going to address that conference, which will be the first time that a Tory leader has not done so in many, many years, if not ever. So it in many ways, it just shows you the incompetence of this lot that they would wheel somebody like Rees-Mogg out in that fashion.
Now, Chris, you're in London. There have been this week vox pops on television, radio, I assume, from people who on that date, the 20th of May 2020, when lockdown was at its most restrictive, you could only meet members of your own family and one other person from outside your own family, and that would have to be outdoors. Some people who had to stand outside windows and watch their parents or partners or husbands, wives dying without being able to be with them. And these testimonies were very moving. And indeed, one member of the DUP in the House of Commons the day before, Tuesday, broke down in the middle of a story about he and his wife being unable to grieve for his mother-in-law. This is genuine hurt and emotion, which British people by and large are loath to, if you like, express. But I must say, it seems to have cut through and touched people. And this was evident, wasn't it, during the week?
Oh, absolutely. The question is often asked of these issues that consume Westminster and the Westminster bubble, whether or not it will cut through. That question isn't even being asked today. We know how much it has cut through via, as you say, these poignant, actually harrowing testimonies given by people who have had to do what you just described of not being able to visit their loved ones when they were dying. And I think this has elicited a quiet anger, a fury, actually, around the country in a quiet British way.
Yes.
That is you can almost touch, and you can actually see for yourself when you see these vox pops, as you describe them, you can see it in the way in which that same Newsnight program that Rees-Mogg spoke at, they had a woman who was leading a campaign group, I think, on behalf of these people, who gave the most eloquent and direct testimony, if you like, as to what had happened, what it was like to live through that time with relatives who were very sick and or dying. And I found that, as I say, harrowing as well as poignant, and everybody is feeling the same way. And you can see that. I mentioned another BBC program, Question Time. That's the BBC's equivalent of Ireland's Questions and Answers. That was on last night. And various aspects of that were interesting, amusing, and poignant. One being that when the Fiona Bruce, the presenter of the program, asked the audience, would previous Tory voters please, if you would now no longer vote Tory, put your hands up? And it looked like two-thirds of the audience put their hands up as having changed their minds as a result of this. And this is where the political cut-through comes, because, of course, Johnson's popularity rating has been plummeting for some time. It's now plumbing the depths. The Labour has, in the most recent opinion poll taken since all of this broke, a 10-point lead. And in some polls, I think it might actually be bigger. So this is cutting through in all sorts of different ways, in terms of the way in which ordinary people are seeing it, in terms of their voting intentions, and the way in which many members of the Tory party are beginning to turn on Johnson in very predictable ways.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, one of the people who alerted us a long time ago to Johnson's character or lack of is Max Hastings, who is now a very respected military historian, but was an editor in Fleet Street in the Times the Telegraph, I believe. But Johnson once worked for him. And about 10 years ago, when Johnson was mayor of London, actually, but there was talk of him running for Downing Street for prime minister if he could get a parliamentary seat, Hastings wrote a memorable piece for, I think, the Daily Mail, in which he said, "If this man ever becomes prime minister, I will be booking a flight to somewhere very far away." And Hastings is not a comedian, and nor is he a hype merchant. He is a serious gent. He's been borne out, and I understand he's out again today in the Times.
Yeah, he writes a diary column as well as an opinion column once or twice a week for the London Times. And today, I think we can forgive him a paragraph in which he essentially, in a most polite and understated way, writes the "I told you so" column. And yes, what he says is that, please, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, stop blaming Johnson. We told you, I told you exactly what this man was like, as you say, over a decade ago. The Conservative Party knew exactly what they were getting when they voted for Johnson. Johnson can no more change his behavior than a cat can stop chasing sparrows. This is who he is. This is who he's always been. It is most unreasonable of us to expect a man who is who he is through and through to change in any fundamental sort of way. This is what was predicted. This is what I told you was going to happen. And now it's happened. The people who are to blame, goes on Hastings, are the people who knew what Johnson was like, but nevertheless, in order to get Brexit done, made him leader and prime minister of Britain. And I think that's absolutely right, actually, because the Tory party stands accused of electing this person with all of these character defects, with all of this charlatanism, with all of these behavioral characteristics that we now are all too evident. They are the ones responsible for this as much as Johnson.
Yes, and this 10-point lead in the opinion poll, I think that's an opinion poll that the Times published. And the Tories are renowned for their ruthlessness. Margaret Thatcher in 1987, Chris, post the Falklands War, she got a majority in the 1997 election of 102. By 1990, she was gone. So let me ask you a question about Dominic Cummings, who appears to be, according to reliable reports, orchestrating all of this. And this latest story that's broken within the last 12 hours about the two parties that merged into one in Downing Street on the eve of Prince Philip's funeral. I mean, this is really outrageous when the Queen has to sit alone in a chapel while her husband has the last ceremonial moment. And these idiots are in Downing Street. I mean, Downing Street is where Boris Johnson lives. Can he possibly have been unaware that there was a rowdy party taking place in the building?
Yeah, well, this the last
was Dominic Cummings at it, and is
well,
this
the, whoever it, we don't know that it's Cummings. We all suspect that it is, quite frankly, but we don't know. But whoever is orchestrating this is doing it brilliantly, because they clearly worked out right at the very beginning that in the knowledge that there were what looks like, we should ask, when wasn't there a party in Downing Street rather than when was there? They appear to be just something that was ongoing, part of the culture. And so rather than dumping the information about many different parties in one go into the media, it's being steadily leaked in the most considered way for doing the most damage to Johnson. And if Johnson has lots of enemies, Cummings is but one. But if it is Cummings, he's doing a brilliant job of maximizing the impact of all of these stories. You might ask why these stories haven't come out before, given that so many people were at them. Why hasn't it leaked before? Well, there are lots of conspiracy theories about that. And one centers on the focus of one of these two parties that have just most recently been revealed. There's somebody called James Slack, who has a lot of form in this regard. It was his leaving party because he was going off from being communications director for Johnson to be deputy editor of The Sun. Now, there's an incestuous way in which the British establishment works in that Slack had come from the Daily Mail, where he was responsible for a very famous headline during the Brexit campaign in which the Mail went after the judiciary. This is one of the many aspects in which I think people are fearful for British democracy and rule of law when you have mainstream newspapers going after judges, in which the headline, you might recall, was Enemies of the People, which of course has many connotations from many different political creeds. So Slack is off, he holds a party, and he himself, as a newspaper man, as deputy editor of The Sun, has been sitting on this story for a year now. And has clearly been sitting on all the other stories. And so you have to ask who else is involved. You mentioned it's Downing Street. And these last two parties, we do know that Johnson was at his country home, Chequers. So he definitely wasn't there for these two. So what he knew and what he didn't know remains to be seen. But there are questions about who knew what, where, and when, about all sorts of different characters. Because don't forget that Rishi Sunak, who's an actor on this stage as well, particularly in the race to succeed Johnson, given that he lives next door to, or at least ostensibly lives next door to Johnson, Sunak has many different houses around the world, actually, the multimillionaire that he is, how could he have not known? And why has he kept silent? Who else in government knew about these parties? Indeed, who else within the administration was at some or all of these parties? And so the question arises about replacing Johnson. If it is to be Sunak, if they replace Johnson with somebody, not necessarily Sunak, but Sunak is the example I'm using here, that then subsequently Cummings or whoever is doing this thing reveals to have been at yet another party, off we go again. So I think they're going to have to be very careful about getting all of the dirt out before they actually replace Johnson, because they need to be very, very careful about who really is clean in all of this. The ways in which this this apology, I think that it's important to stress, as we did at the beginning, that the apology was for the public perception of the event. Johnson's apologized for the mistakes of others, and he apologized for not breaking up the event.
He didn't, in fact, accept that it was a party. He said it was a work event, in his view.
And he didn't admit at all to breaching lockdown rules or apologize for attending the event in the first place. So he was speaking under parliamentary privilege. So it's going to be very interesting, because if he does admit to attending an illegal party, he will open himself up, theoretically, to legal redress and to being prosecuted, as will all of those people. So this couldn't be more serious, because, as I say, the role of the Metropolitan Police, who would have been there in all over the place, as you see on your screens every night, there are police everywhere in Downing Street, and it is the most policed part of the UK. Somebody went out from this party, this most recent revelation, with a suitcase to walk up Whitehall. Presumably they got a cab, actually, because it's a bit of a walk. They probably got a cab up to Whitehall to the Strand, and from the local co-op filled the suitcase with bottles of booze and came back. Yeah. You're telling me that the police didn't see any of this? Come on.
Okay, now let's turn to what we were originally going to talk about. And it's an interesting, very important subject for this country and indeed for the European Union and for Britain. And that is the dispute around the Northern Ireland Protocol And there is a new foreign secretary, Liz Truss, who is one of two people, along with Rishi Sunak, who believe they're qualified to succeed Boris Johnson when what now looks inevitable happens. She has been hosting Maris Sefcovic, the EU negotiator, Brexit negotiator at Chevening, which is the grace and favour country mansion that the foreign secretary is allowed to use. And they were there yesterday. They were to be there today as well. Now, she has said, Liz Truss, that she is prepared to invoke Article 16 and indeed to do some pretty serious damage, because in the end, and it would take a year perhaps, this could end up in a very serious trade war between Britain and the EU. She has said she doesn't intend to give an inch. However, you have some sort of breaking news on that, Chris. One of your theories expressed here on this podcast a couple of months ago now was that if Johnson ever did get into serious trouble, like most leaders, he'd find a foreign enemy, and there was one close at hand, ready-made, the EU. That doesn't appear to have happened, though, does it?
No, and I think the situation has changed dramatically since then, because this isn't just trouble that Johnson's in. This is terminal. In my opinion. So that changes the game. And I think that kind of sort of explains why our mutual friend Lord Frost shuffled off the stage a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Liz Truss's predecessor as the chief negotiator for Brexit. It properly belongs to the foreign secretary, this role, not an unelected official like Frost. And Frost saw that the game had changed, that Johnson was no longer in a position. His position was now so weak that he was unable to deliver on this triggering of Article 16, which clearly Frost always wanted to do, and that the situation had flipped. Far from strengthening Johnson's position, triggering of Article 16 in all likelihood would weaken it further, because given all of the trials and tribulations that are now going on, a trade war with the EU would now be seen unambiguously as something negative, both economically and politically, for Johnson. Just another example of his bumbling incompetence.
Yeah.
So we've had this meeting at Chevening. Now, Chevening is another example of the way the British establishment works. It's in Kent, near Sevenoaks, and so therefore not too far from London. And it's 3,000 acres, Eamon. The 3,000 acres.
Seen the pictures. It's very nice, Chris.
It's very nice. And it's one of those weird things that there was an Earl of Stanhope, who died without an heir. So he gave it over to the state that have been using it for quite some time. When I was in the Treasury in the 1980s, these senior Treasury mandarins used it as their away day place, believe it or not.
Yes.
It hasn't always been the Foreign Secretary's plaything. It's been a number of, in those days, it was the Chancellor of the Exchequer's plaything. But anyway, they've been meeting. The meeting concluded at about, or at least a statement was issued by Liz Truss at about 9:30 this morning, in which she said that the meeting took place in a cordial atmosphere, and it was agreed that officials would meet again next week in intensified talks and principles, that is, Sefcovic and Truss, on the 24th of January, and that we share a desire for a positive relationship between the UK and the EU, underpinned by our shared belief in freedom and democracy. So all very nice words that don't mean very much, other than the talks have concluded and they are continuing, which is a good sign. No mention of Article 16, and certainly no sabres being rattled in the way that Frost always did. So it looks like, at this stage at least, that she's trying to reset the relationship, which from your perspective in Ireland can only be a good thing.
Yeah, just a final question, Chris, about the reaction in Scotland to Rees-Mogg rubbishing Douglas Ross, the leader of Scottish Tories. They have 13 seats, I think, in the Westminster Parliament, 31 seats in the Scottish Parliament. This won't in any way assist the United Kingdom, and indeed it will be good news for Nicola Sturgeon and those who want Scottish independence wanted. It's not much of a stretch to say that Johnson's legacy may be that he has made more possible the breakup of the United Kingdom.
Well, I suspect if you took a referendum on the breakup of Scotland today, in that the answer would be an unambiguous yes, given the level of anger that is present in that country. But time will tell. This certainly, as I said earlier, has poured fuel on the nationalist fire. And it reveals something that or at least is another piece of evidence about something which we've always known about these characters, that the Rees-Moggs of this world, although they belong to something called the Conservative and Unionist Party, to give it its full and ancient title, they are English nativists.
Yes.
They couldn't care less about the Union in any meaningful way. They wouldn't be at all concerned if it went off in its own way. And even Sunak, he has denied this, but a friend of Sunak once said that from a purely economic perspective, he couldn't understand the basis of the Union, and that he would be quite happy for Scotland and Northern Ireland, I once presumed, to float off because of the amount of money, the tens of billions that Londoners and Southeast English people funnel to places like Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. So don't forget that this English nativism does extend not just to Scotland, but also to Ireland. These people don't ever think about Ireland at all, one way or the other. And I've tried for years to explain how Irish interest in British affairs is not reciprocated at all. And that the subvention that the British make to Northern Ireland is something that is a wonder of the world, in the sense that I've always thought that Sinn Féin would have a far more effective propaganda campaign than some of the other things they've tried over the years if they just ran adverts in the English press explaining just how much your income taxes would go down if you allowed Northern Ireland to reunify with the Republic. But the point about Liz Truss striking this a more emollient tone is also part of this piece, in that means, of course, that the DUP, with their desire for the Article 16 thing to be triggered, are about to be hung out to dry again.
Yes, and just a final thought, I'm remembering what you said about Andrew Bridgen. Andrew Bridgen is one of the Spartans, what you once described the Tory cabinet as being, full of right-wing hacks, journalists and after-dinner speakers. Andrew Bridgen really is a right-wing hack. He hasn't been rewarded. He was as loyal as a dog could be to Boris Johnson. I noted when he came on Newsnight last night to announce that he had not only lost confidence in Johnson's ability to be prime minister, but he had sent a letter to the 1922 committee chairman. And 54 of those letters would be required, and it happened to Theresa May, to trigger a vote of confidence in Boris Johnson. If the likes of Andrew Bridgen, Spartan, are deserting, that's a very bad sign, isn't it?
It is a very bad sign, and I do think, as I've said before, actually, they were at the beginning of the end of Johnson. But remember, it was Bridgen and people like him that started to try to get rid of Theresa May very early on in her premiership, because they thought that she was going to deliver a very soft Brexit. And it took him, Bridgen, and the others 2 years to get rid of her. It's not that easy. They got the letters in. They triggered the vote of no confidence, but then she won it. And under the rules of the Tory party, they couldn't do another one for another year. So Johnson, on the assumption, which I think is quite reasonable, that he won't go quietly, he won't go voluntarily, he's clearly going to fight this, because he believes that incredible self-belief that he has, that he can ride this out. And there are plenty of people who think that he could well get through this, particularly as next week, we think, the famous Sue Gray report on all of these parties it could be published. And the Times is reporting that they've already caught sight of it or been briefed on its contents. And it's going to allow him enough wiggle room to get through. Now, we don't know whether that's propaganda or being made up or not. But it's very important to realize that the next phase of this is this Sue Gray report, inquiry into these parties. Sue Gray is a civil servant. Technically, she reports to Johnson. And so, as many others have said, she is, although she is very independent-minded and of the utmost integrity, and everything that she says will be factual, she's not independent.
Her direct boss is the man who sent Johnson's principal private secretary, who is the chap who sent out the emails to 100 people inviting them to party at Downing Street. So she'll have to be very careful, and she's in a pretty difficult position. We're very grateful to you, Chris, for joining us from London. Thank you very much indeed. That's Chris Johns. We're grateful to Chris, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.